Welcome to the Earn More, Stress Less podcast with me, Caro Sison. This podcast is for self-employed business owners just like you, who really want to grow their business and become successful and profitable, but without all the stress and hassle. I want to share my 30 years of business experience to show you how simple it can be to earn more money and how you can get organized without needing a business degree or any other qualifications. I'll be talking about the easy steps that you can put in place right now to start earning more money today and to help you get the business that you deserve and dream of. Without further ado, let's get started. This week's podcast is sponsored by Pocket PA, helping self-employed business owners to get organized, understand their finances, and do their accounts all in one place using a powerful online tool. If you're serious about making a profit and having a successful business, then using a simple digital web app like Pocket PA is the best way to grow and scale your business. Visit pocketpa.com for more details and start managing your money like a pro today. Hello and welcome. Today we're back talking with Joanne Fisher on the topic of being self-employed, and this time we're dealing with copycats and how to handle a situation if you find that someone else is copying almost everything that you seem to be doing in your business. Now, Jo's been on a couple of earlier episodes, so I will put in the show notes a reference so that you can go back and listen to her as a legal expert. She's covered before about terms and conditions and how to protect your business, and also about handling non-payers. So two vital episodes that a lot of self-employed people need to know about. But today we're going to be talking about what to do if you find another business owner seems to be lifting almost everything that you do, and you can't look up without almost seeing a mirror reflection of your own business being flaunted right in front of your eyes. That's such a frustrating thing. And I know a few people that have had that happen. So Jo, thanks for joining us again. Take it away. What can our listeners do to protect them and their businesses with the least amount of stress and upset when they have somebody that seems to be copying what they're doing?
Hi, nice to be back again. It's frustrating, right? It's such bad form to be operating your business in that way, but we can't deny that it happens, and it happens a lot. There's some really key things that you can do to protect yourself, your business, your content. The first one is to really think about your contracts and your terms and conditions. So you're working with suppliers, you're working with customers, you could be working with freelancers, employees. Make sure all of those contracts are really watertight in terms of how you want people to be interacting with your intellectual property. So all of your content, all of your ideas, confidentiality provisions, intellectual property clauses, confirming whether or not they're allowed to share your content. So your customers, if they come into a program or they're working with you on a consultancy basis, you're sharing know-how about your business and about how you operate, and potentially workbooks and content you've created to help them. So you want to have really clear terms in your contracts with your customers to say, I'm sharing this information with you for your own personal, non-commercial use. You cannot sell it on, you can't use it in any other way than I've given you permission for. So that's the first thing to really think about. The other thing to think about then is to really think about the kind of IP that you hold in your business. So it's not just your content, is it? It's the names of your programs.
And when you say IP, you're referring to intellectual property. Yeah. That's what you mean by IP.
Yes, I am. Sorry. So intellectual.
That's all right. No, could you just explain what intellectual property actually means for some people that might not have heard that term before?
Of course. So if you imagine, I think the best way to describe it, if you imagine a bricks and mortar business and maybe a vehicle company that's got a fleet of lorries out on the forecourt, their assets are their physical assets, it's their lorries, it's their property. When we're an online business or maybe a service-based business, our intellectual property becomes the assets and the value in our business. So it's the things we create with our mind, it's our content, it's our blogs, it's our, if you write a book, workbooks, anything that you do, your designs, is created by you. And that becomes the value in your business. So that's what we mean when we talk about intellectual property.
So does that cover like your logo and those sorts of things? Do you have to protect, you know, if you design a logo and you have particular colors around it or a particular style, do you have to protect all of those things, or do you trademark those, or what's the protection around that to make sure nobody can set up a business that looks really, really similar and then people get confused and think that they're coming to see you, but they've been sort of hoodwinked into seeing somebody else?
Yes, so absolutely. You've got your copyright, as it as the words suggest, is yours as of right.
That's the text, anything that you've written. Yeah.
Anything you've created. You've also got design rights. They're automatically protected. So if you design a logo, people can't just go and lift that logo and use it as their own, because they are breaching the regulations around copyright and design rights. But with logos and things like that, I would suggest going one step further and registering them. If they're really key fundamental parts of your business, register them as a trademark so that you can protect the look of that. And a trademark just gives you, it's referred to as a monopoly right. So you don't need to prove who was using it first, because once it's registered, you're the owner of that trademark.
And it's not a hugely expensive process. I would say a couple of £100, is it, to trademark something in the UK? Is that right?
Yeah, £170 is the application. But then each category that you register into could increase the price by £50. So, and do think about your business as a whole. What are you likely to do in the future, and get your trademark registered into all of the necessary categories?
Okay. And for people that are just, if you're a local self-employed business and you notice that somebody in the nearby town or village, whatever, seems to be doing the same sort of stuff, you write a post on social media, and I know that you can't stop people from being inspired by your own creativity, and you do want to inspire people, but sometimes it is really difficult to determine if they're actually copying you, or if your idea is just trending, or if something everybody's doing. Who's got the originality on that sort of idea, and what can you do if there seems to be a pattern evolving with somebody else down the road who seems to, a few days after you put something out, they seem to be putting something almost the same out again and again and again, whether it's on Facebook or Instagram or social media, whatever it is, what can you do about that?
Well, the thing to really think about is that it's not the idea that is protected. So if that was the case, if you imagine there's a million different law firms out there all doing exactly the same thing, we can't stop people from doing the same thing as us, but we can stop them from taking our creations. So somebody being inspired by your social media post or your blog post and writing something similar along the same lines is not a breach. But somebody lifting it word for word and copying and pasting it across would be. And I do suggest then, yeah, we get quite aggressive with it. You can't let that stuff slide.
So copycatting is like when somebody sets up a website which uses virtually your same colours and your brands, very, very similar wording, perhaps the same fonts. And you just, you know, at a quick glance, you could look at it and think, oh my God, that almost looks like my site. Is that what the sort of the thing that you're talking about, that you could take more of a firm line against?
Well, there's a law of called passing off. And if a brand is trying to pass themselves off as being linked to you in some way, or trying to piggyback almost off the goodwill that you've built up in your brand, even if you aren't registered, you may potentially have an action in passing off, but that gets expensive. So the more you can do to protect and register your logos, so trademarking it, you're much more likely then to be able to, or it'll be much more easier or much easier to be able to take action.
Okay. And if you're a business and you've created, for example, some packages or something like this, or a gift box subscription, and perhaps you find another beautician down the road is doing something exactly the same a few weeks later, can you collect some evidence and sort of contact them? I know that there's something called a cease and desist letter, but is that the sort of thing that you might want to send that for? Or what could you use? What sort of tactics could you use to sort of just let someone know that you see them and you're watching them and it's just annoying you? Or what's the best approach, do you think, Jo?
And that's it again. We've got to be really careful. Somebody, and this is where there's a lot of misconceptions, somebody doing the same thing as you is not going to be a breach or an infringement of intellectual property. It's when people take your brand, your copy, and use it as their own. As I say, somebody with two subscription boxes similar, unless the actual logo design and the name of the box was the same, or what they put inside was an original design that was being copied, it wouldn't necessarily be an infringement. So first of all, take a step back and think about, is this just triggering me because I'm annoyed that someone else is doing something similar to me, which is of course, competition in the market is difficult to handle sometimes. But if it is moving into, they are trying to piggyback off the back of you, they're trying to mislead the general public into believing that you're the same company so that they can poach and steal your customers, that's when you need to be thinking about doing something about it. And yeah, a cease and desist then is a really useful letter. Again, if you've listened to the debt recovery podcast we did, there's a format to follow with a cease and desist. So we have to be given a certain amount of information on what, where we think the breaches have occurred, when they were showing evidence of it, what we need people to do now, so to cease and to stop, so to remove any infringing content, to delete it, to give you an undertaking that they will never do that to you again, to potentially apologize in public. It depends on who you are and your brand. You could be asking that. But then really consider, so that cease and desist is the first step. If they continue after that point, again, we need to be doing a risk analysis and working out, is this causing harm in my business? Am I losing clients? Is there a loss to me? And then consider taking it further and actually pursuing them through the courts for intellectual property infringement.
Okay. I mean, when I was little, people would wear the same thing as you, or they'd do their hair like you. I remember my mother telling me that, you know, oh, you know, they want to be like you. It's so flattering. And but when you've got a business and you've worked really, really hard at it, it's just so annoying to sort of see other people doing something similar to you. And I guess the one thing I would say about having a self-employed business, yes, you work really, really hard, but nobody is going to be you. And you are unique, and your customers are coming to you because of the things that you offer. So as much as somebody might be trying to emulate what you do and to be sort of not necessarily passing off as you, but they perhaps look up to you, and they obviously have recognized you as a, you know, a successful business, and they're wanting to do some things that they perceive you as being successful, and they want a little bit of that. And I get it that when you've worked really hard, that can just be so frustrating if it's threatening your livelihood. But at the end of the day, most people will run out of steam, particularly if you contact them to let them know that you've watched them and you've noticed that they're doing things, and you feel that there's an element of copycatting going on. But I just think that there is only one you, and you can evolve your business, and at some point you can rise above it and just continue being innovative and just offering and doing what you love. But I get it is tough to deal with, and changing your mindset about copying will also help if you just sort of try not to let it trigger you. You mentioned people triggering you. One of the other things that I wanted to ask you about today, Joe, was if you feel that people are, I want to use the word slander, but that might be a little bit too forceful, but if you feel that people are gossiping about your business, or they're having, that there's some negative things either being posted on social media, or things have got back to you that other people might be saying about your business, and it's you know, a pattern, and it's happening repeatedly, what sort of things can you do if you hear that going on about your business?
Yeah, of course. So just, can I quickly go back? So to wrap up on the IP side of things, yeah, think about protecting your designs, registering the ones that are really important to you, register your trademarks, and definitely think about putting IP notices onto everything. So copyright of, we take infringement really seriously, and we'll take action against you, and it will deter some people because they see that how seriously you take your brand. But on from a defamation perspective, so there will always be a risk of bad reviews online, and a bad review is not necessarily defamation. Defamation, so slander is when it's spoken and people are saying things to you, and then we've got libel as well, which is written. So if people are posting things that are inaccurate, they're not the truth, they're done maliciously with a view to changing or lowering you in the estimation of the general public and your customers, yeah, you may potentially have an action for defamation against them. Again, the first step in that is to gather evidence as much as you can, screenshot everything, speak to people to see if they'd be willing to provide evidence if it is more spoken word than written down. And the cease and desist letter then, in the same way as you would with IP infringement, is really the first step in that, to tell people. And that's what we're saying, cut it out. We're hearing and seeing what you're doing. We know you're trying to damage our reputation. It could cause potentially serious harm to my business and my brand financially and from acquiring new clients. So I'm willing to take it further if you don't stop. And that letter is really powerful. It's an awful situation to be in. It's so emotive for people to see other people trying to damage their business. You work so hard as entrepreneurs to grow your business and your brand. So I get it that it's tough to step into to maybe take a legal action in those moments. But if you don't, it could get out of hand. So don't fear it.
Yeah, you have to protect your business ultimately, because that's bringing in your livelihood, and often worked for years to get it to a point. So it is really disheartening when you hear people that aren't saying respectful things about it. Could I just ask again, you touched on reviews and stuff. If you do get bad reviews, is there any legal way that, if it's particularly if you think that they're unfair, is there anything that you can do these days to either address them or get them taken down, or to have a right to reply? Because we hear that anything on our social media is going to be there forevermore for people to be able to go back and see. So if you have a review that isn't particularly complimentary, yeah, and you feel that it was just a disgruntled customer, that actually it wasn't a fair reflection, and it always pops to the top of the list whenever people are searching for you, what can you do to be able to address that and either set the record straight or at least have a right to reply and put your version of events across?
It's so frustrating. So one of the defences to defamation is honest opinion. And if somebody can prove that it's their honest opinion of you and your service, then they're not going to ever be found guilty of defamation or libel. So what you need to do, we always say to our clients, reply to those reviews. Don't get into a slanging match. We want to retain professionality and composure and compassion in those replies. But yeah, hit it head on with the, we're sorry that you feel like that. We did X, Y, and Z to remedy the situation. We've changed things within our business to ensure it doesn't happen again. We really appreciate your feedback. Feedback in whatever guise it is, unless it's glowing, is sometimes hard to digest. But actually, it's really key to us. We all know we get things wrong sometimes. We're not perfect human beings. Try and take it as a learning experience. But do reply, because that will minimise then, show the general public that your customer service is actually excellent, because you're even dealing with these bad reviews.
Yeah, I think that's excellent advice. You don't want to get into some slanging match and really inflame it and suddenly create some Twitter storm that goes off and becomes much bigger than it needed to be. So I think, yes, acknowledging it and taking that feedback for what it is, and hope that by perhaps replacing it with more positive feedback, perhaps asking more customers to leave reviews that you know are going to be positive, it will end up sort of giving a balanced perspective for people to see that the majority of your feedback and reviews are actually excellent, and that it was just sort of one, you know, nobody is perfect all of the time. And I think people are often more suspicious if there's so many 5-star reviews all the time. Well, not everybody could be happy, surely. But
and actually, a really great way of avoiding that situation is to have a really good complaints policy and procedure in your business, because you know when clients aren't entirely happy. Give them the option to make a complaint, investigate it, then respond to it properly. And actually, they may not even get to that stage, because if you handle the complaint procedure well, the end of that relationship will always end on a good note. So they're unlikely to leave a review, or the review will say, yes, unhappy to begin with, but then went through a great complaints procedure. Another great piece of advice, and I know we're up against it for time, but one of my old partners that I worked with always, because as lawyers, we receive emails and messages continually ripping you to shreds of you've done this wrong, because we're fighting cases, of course. But one of my old partners used to say to me, write the response and leave it in your inbox for 24 hours as well. Then go back and look at it. Don't respond out of emotion. Don't hit reply straight away to those reviews.
Yeah, that's a really good piece of advice, Jo. That's a good note to end it on. Because I think most people, if they're complaining, they just want to feel heard and to feel that you've taken on board their feedback and they were listened to. So as long as you're able to do that and you offer that opportunity, I think that minimises the number of people that will make a complaint and actually decide to put finger to keyboard warrior type bad reviews and stuff, which can be damaging. Lovely. Jo, thank you so much. Thanks for sharing all of that today. There was loads of really useful bits again from you. If our listeners would like to find out more about you and to connect, where's the best place that they can go to find you?
So the website is joannefisherlaw.co.uk, and we're on Facebook and Instagram at Joanne Fisher Law.
Lovely. Joanne, thank you. Have a great day. And thanks everyone for listening to another episode of Earn More, Stress Less. We'll catch you again next week, and I will have another guest to share more information with. Have a great week, whatever it is you're doing. Thanks for listening to the Earn More, Stress Less podcast with me, Caro Sison. If you've enjoyed this week's episode, then do hit subscribe so we can catch up again soon. And please kindly leave a review if you've got a moment. and share with anyone else that you think this podcast could help on their self-employed journey. If you're ready to make bigger breakthroughs in your business life and want to get way more organized and understand your finances the really simple way, then start your very own 14-day free trial today using the super powerful software tool Pocket PA that I made for my own son and daughter. Go to pocketpa.com/podcast and let's get you on the way to earning more money and stressing much less. Have a great week, whatever you're doing.